This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Headaches. Sometimes they're just a mild throbbing that annoys you as you go about your daily business. Sometimes they hurt so much you have to give up and lie down. My guest, Dr. Fred Schaftel, is an expert on headaches, their causes, and treatment. He's the author of several books on the subject. His latest is Headache Relief for Women. Dr. Schaftel is co-founder of the New England Center for Headache in Stamford, Connecticut, and national president of AACE, the American Council for Headache Education. He says the latest research on migraines focuses on biochemical and electrical activity in the brain. For example, scientists are learning about the role of serotonin.
Serotonin is a biochemical that's found throughout the body and in the brain and seems to be a very, very important part of what's involved with migraine. There are many other chemical messengers or neurotransmitters that are involved, but a lot of focus has been on serotonin. Serotonin is a chemical that's available in the brain and is a neurotransmitter and seems to be disturbed in patients with migraine. It may either be a disturbance of the receptors themselves on nerve terminals or blood vessels, or it may be a disturbance in serotonin itself, the molecule. Well, there's a study that was just done in Europe by Dr. Diener and his group using a PET scan, which shows function of the brain. You see, CT scans and MRI scans show only structure. So in this particular examination, he looked at 8 or 9 migraine patients who were suffering acute attacks and saw this exact part of the brain light up and show excessive activity during the migraine attack. And when the migraine attack began to die down, so did this activity. So it's just confirming a lot of kind of hypothetical notions we've had based on our clinical evidence about what's going on with migraine. Some of the other advances are advances in outlining more of the receptors in the brain that are involved in migraine and some of the chemicals that are involved. There's a lot of advances in the area of molecular biology. There's been advances in the genetics of headache as well. So all these things together are just increasing the level of awareness and knowledge about the basic biological or neurobiological roots of migraine, which is clearly both a biochemical, neurological, and electrical phenomenon that's involved in the brain.
Okay, so scientists are pretty sure now that migraines are caused by electrical or biochemical processes within the brain, yes?
Both electrical and biochemical changes in the brain involving, at least on some levels, these chemical messengers in the brain that we call neurotransmitters.
Now, what would set this off?
Well, that's the interesting thing. Well, number one, it seems that patients with migraine have more excitability of nerve activity in their brain, and they're more prone to having this process set off. We know genetics and families play a big role in this, 70 to 90%. Of people with migraine have a first-degree relative of it with it. Now, we know that there are certain triggers that can ignite this process, and there are a whole host of triggers. Exactly how they do it, we're not sure about. But we know that hormone certainly is a key factor in women. We know that diet can play a role. We know that changes in one's external or internal environment, external like weather, seasons, time zones, schedule changes, things of that sort.
And we'll get to more of those triggers in more detail a little later in our conversation. Now, a lot of people assume that people who are prone to bad headaches are just incredibly neurotic, and that's why they get them. So the more we know about brain chemistry, can we rule out the neurotic stuff?
I think so. I think, why don't we say the same things about people who develop ulcers or asthma or ulcerative colitis or angina or heart disease or hypertension or diabetes? You know, there's no disorder in the world where stress and psychological factors can't play a role. I can't think of any. For example, diabetics. When diabetics go through times of physical or emotional stress, their insulin requirements change. It's no less or more true of a disorder like migraine. And I think that's been a really bad rap that people with migraine have gotten over the years. I've spoken to people whose children, for example, have an aggressive version of migraine called chronic daily headache, who even relatives and friends have said, well, your 28-year-old daughter just won't grow up, and that's the issue, as if people are using this horrible pain as some kind of excuse. Now, there's no question that people who happen to have, side-by-side with migraine, major psychological problems, that those problems don't affect their disorder. But again, that's true of everything else. I think, in that sense, people with migraine, particularly women, have really been maligned as far as that's concerned. And especially women can't win.
What's new in the realm of pain relief now that scientists believe more and more that headaches are caused by electrical and biochemical changes in the brain? Are there any new drugs that address those changes within the brain?
Well, as we've identified a part of the migraine process, which involves a very important nerve in the head, the fifth nerve or trigeminal nerve, which is named such because it has three divisions, we're beginning to identify more of the receptors and more of the biochemicals in the brain that appear to be involved with migraine. Now, Imitrex or sumatriptan was developed on the basis of some of those receptors which involve serotonin. A lot more work has been done to identify other types of medication that will be coming out over the next several years that will also be similar to Imitrex, but perhaps quicker acting, longer acting, less side effects. But as we look at other receptors that don't involve changes in blood vessels, but that can reverse the migraine process, we'll be coming onto medications that have the potential for greater safety and less side effects. And so the research that's being done worldwide, and particularly by Mike Moskowitz at Harvard, has been nothing short of excellent in terms of what the future will bring for migraine patients. We're also looking at pain receptors in the brain. We're looking at pain medications that may be helpful in reversing pain without causing the problems of tolerance or addiction, because there are different pain receptors up there as well. Most people are familiar with what's called mu receptors or morphine-like receptors, but there are other receptors that can affect pain that don't involve becoming dependent or addicted to medication, and those are being explored now.
Let's just review some of the things we talked a little bit about the last time, like what the difference is between a migraine headache and a tension headache, and, you know, does it matter if they're any different? I mean, do you need to know which kind you have?
I think so. I think that the diagnosis of the headache is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Very basically, we explain to our patients that we can divide all of headache problems into two major categories, what we've called primary and what we call secondary headache disorders. The secondary headache disorders, Terry, are the ones that are a symptom of some underlying medical problem where you can find the cause, identify it, and then hopefully remove the cause and then the headache. Now, the more serious causes are the ones that people start to worry about when they first get these headache problems, like tumors and bleeds and aneurysms, to less ominous problems such as sinus problems, dental problems, eye problems, and allergy problems. But there are many other medical problems like diabetes. There are many medications that can cause headache as a side effect. You want to rule those things out first, because if possible, you want to remove the cause and be able to then actually really realize a cure. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending how you look at it, most headache disorders and most people with recurrent headache problems have one or more of the primary headache disorders. The primary headache disorders are by far the most common cause of recurrent headache in over 90% of people.
In other words, most people don't really have brain tumors when they have a bad headache.
Oh, thank goodness, no. They have headaches that are related to some of the biochemical issues that we were just discussing earlier. The three types of primary headache disorders are migraine, tension-type headache, and cluster.
And what's the difference?
Well, the difference is important because depending on the diagnosis, that's what you base treatment on. Migraine, we have very specific criteria for now. First of all, you've had to have had at least 5 previous episodes of this kind of pain. The pain generally lasts 4 to 72 hours, and you want to have ruled out organic factors like tumors, which may sometimes mimic migraine. Once you have that, we then look at 2 groups of symptoms, 2 from column A and 1 from column B. Here's column A. There are 4 symptoms here. The pain is one-sided. The pain is throbbing. The pain is moderate to severe and can interfere with or completely restrict your ability to function. And fourth, activity makes the headache worse, like exercise. For example, if I say to a patient with migraine, "Would you exercise during a migraine?" they look at me like I'm completely out of my mind, and at that point I know I have the diagnosis clinched. So you need 2 of those and 1 of the following: the presence of nausea, the presence of vomiting, or sensitivity to both light and sound. So traditionally, the migraine patient will absolutely retreat to a dark and quiet room, avoid all sensory stimuli. Even the light from a clock radio can send shivers of pain through their bodies, and the least little sound will bother them as well. So they want to hibernate, and they want to sleep if they can. Actually, for centuries, we've known that sleep is an age-old, tried-and-true relief factor for migraine, and it probably relates to changes in serotonin that are brought on by sleep, where serotonin is restored as you go to sleep. So that's what migraine is, and it's a very debilitating disorder, affecting women 3 times more frequently than men. Actually, before puberty, though, it's more frequent in boys than girls. But as soon as hormonal issues become a problem, it goes up 3 to 1.
And how does migraine compare with what you'd call tension headache?
Well, I would say for the most part, in terms of the intensity of the pain and the associated symptoms of nausea and vomiting, it doesn't compare. And that's one of the reasons that migraine patients have felt abandoned and isolated and merely misunderstood. They really feel kind of apart from everybody else, because when they say the word headache, most people assume it's like the ordinary tension headaches that all of us get from time to time. 90 to 95% of us will have a headache from time to time. Tension headaches are mild to moderate, really, at best. It's more of a squeezing pain. It's more both-sided. It's more of an aching feeling that we may feel as a band around our head, or we may feel a cap-like sensation. It may go down to our neck and shoulders. There's no nausea. There's no vomiting. There's no sensitivity to both light and sound. Most people can function, though maybe at a little reduced capacity, and they relax or take an over-the-counter medication, and that's it. But you don't call into work. What happens if you call into work and you say to your boss, gee, I'm sorry, I can't come in today. I have a headache. What kind of response do you think you're going to get? Not a very good one. So migraine and tension type headache, though, are both classified as headache disorders. They are in absolutely 2 different worlds. They're galaxies apart.
My guest is headache expert Dr. Fred Schefftel. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Fred Schefftel. He's co-founder of the New England Center for Headache in Stamford, Connecticut, and he's also the national president of the American Council for Headache Education. And his latest book is Headache Relief for Women. If you're trying to get a sense for yourself of whether you should be taking a prescription migraine medicine or whether over-the-counter remedies are good enough for you, how can you judge?
Well, I think you can judge, again, in terms of are you missing work? Are you missing time from work? Are you not functioning? Do you have to cancel social engagements? Are you afraid of upcoming social engagements or business commitments? You know, if that's the picture and you find that your over-the-counter medication may take the edge off of a little bit, but you find that you're using it over several days to just kind of take the edge off but still feeling pretty lousy, I think you ought to talk to your doctor about more specific remedies that we have available for these disorders. And there certainly are many nowadays.
Now, name a couple of the prescription remedies that you think are good and don't have a lot of side effects.
Okay. Well, first of all, in looking at the acute treatment of headache after you've made your diagnosis of migraine or tension-type headache, or a cluster for that matter, start what I would call step-care therapy. Most of the time, by the time people have seen us, they've used over-the-counter medications without success, as we've just spoken about. But if you're looking at OTC medication, we can divide them up into simple analgesics or simple pain medications and the ones that are combined. The simple ones are single-ingredient medications. Those are Tylenol, Advil, Aleve, Arutis, aspirin. If those don't help you, you might consider a combined ingredient, which is Anacin, which has caffeine and aspirin, or Excedrin, which has caffeine, aspirin, and Tylenol in it. If those have not helped, then we go on to the more powerful medications, and I like to start again with the mildest. One of the medications that's very, very useful for both migraine and tension-type headache with minimal side effects is a medicine called Midrin. It has a couple of ingredients in it. It has Tylenol, a mild muscle relaxant in it, and something that helps to constrict blood vessels. And we use a lot of Midrin and find that to be very helpful and very well tolerated. It's an excellent medication for childhood migraine. Again, with children and migraine, you want to stay away from aspirin products because of Reye syndrome, but you can use the Tylenol-type products. After Midrin, there's very useful medications that are well tolerated that contain a mixture of either aspirin or Tylenol, plus a little caffeine, plus butalbital or barbiturate. These medications have been around now for almost 50 years. They're very safe to use. They go by the brand names of Furanol, Furoset, or Estric. Now, these medications are useful. The problem with them, again, is them being overprescribed. I have seen really ridiculous prescriptions written for huge amounts of these medications, and patients don't know what to do with them and inadvertently start to overuse them and then come to us basically addicted. But if you use these medications occasionally, they can be excellent. Then there's a whole group of prescription non-steroidals, which if you don't have ulcer or hypertension, are very, very well tolerated. They go by the names of Anaprox or Naprosyn or Meclamin or Ansaid, and they can be very useful for both migraine and or tension type headache. Even the simple narcotics, again used occasionally, like Tylenol with codeine, can be very helpful. It's the fact when you use these products too often that it's a problem.
Well, I remember the last time we talked, you talked about something called the rebound headache.
Right.
Which means if you take over-the-counter, over-the-shelf, medication too often, that it can almost reinforce that headache pattern. And ever since then, every time I reach for a painkiller, you know, aspirin or Tylenol, I'm thinking, uh-oh, am I going to get a rebound headache? Am I taking too much or am I under the threshold? So tell us what the rebound headache is and give us some guidelines.
Okay. The rebound headache occurs, there's about 3% of the population that has something called chronic daily headache. 80% of those people are overusing analgesic or pain-killing medication, be it by prescription or non-prescription. Two things happen. One, it absolutely will make the headache continue to be chronic, and two, it will get in the way of any non-medication or medication approach from working. And that's a problem. You really are trading in some short-term relief for keeping that disorder going. The pain of rebound is characterized by a waxing and waning pain that's there from practically morning till night, mild to moderate, and usually most of these patients have superimposed episodes of more severe headaches, which turn out to be migraine. So my advice is this. If you find yourself using the over-the-counter medications 3 or more times per week, or if you find that your headaches are significantly interfering with the quality of your life at work, home, and play, if you can't leave your house without a bottle of some over-the-counter medication in your purse or in your pocket,
yes.
I think then you might want to talk to your doctor about other approaches to it. So I think 3 or more times a week is when people should start to think about talking to their doctor about headaches. And by the way, one of the things we've known from some studies that have been done is that patients with headache do not even mention their headache to the primary care doctor until the last 2 minutes of their visit. And we know that a lot of patients bring up some of the most important things that they need to talk about at the end of the visit, so headache is then given short shrift. Advice to the listener. When you come into your doctor, if you have headaches that are bothering you, please bring it up at the front end of that interview or that visit. Let your doctor know that your headaches are bothering you. My advice to doctors in terms of interviewing patients who have headache is the first question they should ask is, do your headaches interfere with the quality of your life? Then if you get an answer, yes, they do. I'm taking non-prescription medications every day. 3 times a month, I get so bad that I'm not able to work or take care of my responsibilities at home. At least the doctor now hears that you have a serious complaint. So don't add to what I would call the trivialization of headache by both physicians and the media.
My guest is headache expert Dr. Fred Schefftel. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Now, if you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Fred Schefftel, and he is the co-founder of the New England Center for Headache in Stamford, Connecticut, and he's also the president of the American Council for Headache Education. He's co-author of the new book, Headache Relief for Women. Now, your new book contains a lot of information about menstrual cycles and headaches and pregnancy and headaches and so on. So let's get into some of that. How does headache relate to a woman's hormone levels?
Well, as we've known, clearly the ratio in migraine goes up 3 to 1 after puberty. It's really because of the nature of cyclical estrogens. During a woman's normal hormonal cycle, estrogens go up and down. Now, estrogens can have an indirect effect on blood vessel activity, and it's really clear now that the changing levels of estrogen also have an effect on brain chemistry, and when they are falling, it can increase susceptibility to incoming pain stimuli. Well, we've known from studies from years ago that it's the fall of estrogen, which occurs premenstrually and to some extent during ovulation, that can make women who have a vulnerability for migraine susceptible to it at that time. We know, for example, that during pregnancy, Terry, that 75% of women with migraine feel great. Why is that? The reason is that during pregnancy, going into your fourth month, estrogens are sustained at a high level. They do not fluctuate. Then you talk about going into menopause, and around menopause, there are more fluctuations around the perimenopausal area involving estrogen and progesterone that can affect the woman adversely. Then you talk about the issue of hormone replacement. That's controversial enough, but there are ways of replacing hormones in migraineous women that will make them worse and ways of replacing it that make them better. Unfortunately, too many OBGYN doctors are not necessarily sensitive to the issue of migraine. They don't truly understand how debilitating it can be, and they replace estrogens the way they do for non-migraineous women, and that can be a disaster.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is this, is that most of the time the way estrogens are replaced postmenopausally is kind of mimicking the menstrual cycle. So you're put on estrogen, for example, Premarin, Estrace, the estrogen patch, days 1 through 21 or 1 through 25. And then you're put on progesterone someplace in there as well, either days 1 through 10 or 15 through 25. Every woman who's on the cyclical replacement with migraine dreads going on the progesterone because they know when they go on that, the likelihood is they're going to get killed as far as migraine is concerned. So the problem is that women who still have their uteri intact really need to take progesterone to protect them against the cancer potential of the estrogens as far as the uterus is concerned. So here's the way we do it. If you have your uterus intact, we recommend that the estrogens be given on a daily basis, that they not be cycled. We also recommend that the progesterone be given in smaller doses on a daily basis as well. It gives you the advantage of the protection you need, and it also gives you the advantage of stopping the cycling, which is the major issue. Sometimes you may need to switch to different types of hormone replacement if you find that your headaches are not doing well with the first type. And OBGYN people have to be open to listening to that. And I usually give our women patients articles to give to their gynecologist. And I find at that point the gynecologist is more open to looking at the issue and is generally very receptive to making the changes that we suggest based on all the literature on estrogens, progesterones, and women.
If a woman's headaches seem to be related to changes in hormones during her menstrual cycle or related to menopause, does that mean she should be treating her headache differently than other people?
Yes, to some extent. And the reason is this, is we know that the migraines that are associated directly with the menstrual cycle are more difficult to treat by and large than those not associated with the cycle. Even the same woman, her non-menstrual attacks respond much better to medication than her menstrual attacks. There's some evidence that medicines like Imitrex seem to work as well during the menstrual cycle. Now, because it involves hormones, Terry, there are some subtle things that one can do around that time of the month hormonally that may be helpful and not dangerous. For example, I said that the reason that women are prone to these headaches around the period is related to falling estrogen. We may put them on a very, very tiny dose of the estrogen patch around their period, which doesn't really affect their period, but prevents the estrogens from falling and can really delay the headache or even prevent it from occurring. So there are some special maneuvers around menses time that can be done. Sometimes we may just use a non-steroidal medication like Anaprox a couple of times a day going into the period once we have that headache timed, and that can be helpful. So there are some perimenstrual regimens that are available, and we talk about them in the book as well.
I want to look at some non-drug-oriented ways of dealing with headache. Now, tell me what kind of success you've had with these things, a massage, acupuncture, hypnosis, biofeedback.
We've had varying degrees of success with all of those modalities, but I think what people have to understand is that, you know, they'll talk to other patients who say, oh, hypnosis did it for me, oh, acupuncture did it for me. Unfortunately, the same modality does not work for every given person. So we're open to trying a variety of these things. We need to combine both pharmacological and non-pharmacological approaches. Acupuncture and acupressure can be helpful for some. Self-hypnosis, relaxation, biofeedback can be helpful for others. Exercise, diet manipulation, vitamins. There are certain vitamins and herbs that can be helpful for some patients. And we like patients to really try to use a potpourri of these non-pharmacological approaches as well.
Dr. Fred Cheftel is the co-founder of the New England Center for Headache in Stamford, Connecticut, and national president of AACE, the American Council for Headache Education. His latest book is Headache Relief for Women. Our interview was recorded last February. Our series on the body and the mind concludes tomorrow.